WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshall guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, it is another Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we're coming to you. We're live. This isn't pre-recorded. And I'm joined. You got a co-host this evening. Yeah. It's not that voice that you heard, though. He's our first guest who walked out of the bullpen early, which is awesome because he's here prior to it. State Rep Josh Cutler is our first guest.
Good evening.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great.
But he's not the co-host. Mr. Bob Hayes. Mr. Bob Hayes is my co-host. And Bob is going to be kind of featured. He's one of a number of voices as we talk about educational funding.
Well, Kevin, I knew that educational funding piece had come up, and poor Josh is sitting here. He hears one from one of our members all the time, six times a day. So Josh Worthy walked in the room and said, "Oh, Bob's here. It'll be easier tonight."
Wait. Can I guess which member it is?
Certainly.
Would the initials be FS?
FMS, Frederick M. Small.
What's the M stand for?
I believe it's Martin.
Okay.
I believe. I'm not totally sure,
Melvin,
but I believe it is.
We'll have to find out.
Josh, what's your take?
What's my take? Well, I'm delighted to talk about school funding anytime you like, and I'm happy to take calls from the aforementioned individual, and certainly you as well, Bob, and I appreciate all you do in this chair of the Whitman-Hanson School Committee.
Well, Josh, we also appreciate the fact that you're up there on Capitol Hill trying your very hardest to get some more funding for the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District, and not just the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District, but for all the districts in the Commonwealth, even though you represent Duxbury, Hanson, and part of Pembroke, or is it all of Pembroke?
All of Pembroke.
And this is why he's the co-host and I'm just a guest, because he just came up with a master segue into what I believe is one of your first topics on the list here.
That is true. You've
done this before, Bob, I can tell.
Yeah, occasionally.
He's a little bit of a shill. He doesn't mind. We could jump right into the segment, but the only problem is we got traffic.
Oh, well, we need to get the traffic out of the way.
I think it's kind of light, so if we go astray a minute or two over, so be it. But before we jump into your segment, we should probably tease the fact, other than Josh Cutler, who's going to stop here, talk a little bit about some updates about the House Ways and Means proposed budget. I'll talk a little about the FY 2020 budget funding in regards to, let me see if I got most of the stuff on the list. Education, local aid, substance abuse assistance, just to name a few. Plus, we got to also make sure we tease about the student art show.
Yes.
Kind of big. And, of course, you got a book tour going on, because you're not just a state rep, you're an author.
Yes.
Mobtown Massacre.
Mobtown Massacre.
I know that and he recently just did an author talk.
I did, in Hanson, yes.
In Hanson. So we're going to give him time to talk about that, Bob.
This could take a long time.
I could take up your whole show.
I was figuring we'd get the Mobtown Massacre book signed by Josh.
I did.
Unbelievable.
I did. Oh, you didn't get one yet?
No.
You're throwing me under the bus, Kevin.
No. Hold on. We'll get you one. I'll get you one.
All right.
I will buy them. No, come on. You put a lot of hard work in this. I'll buy the book, and I'll sign it for you. Oh, wait,
oh,
it doesn't
boy.
Work that way.
Signed by Cutler and Tachi.
Yes. Other guests that we have this evening, Kevin DiMarzio, who is a local candidate who's going to be stopping by to talk about his campaign to hopefully be the next selectman on the Board of Selectmen in Abington. course, he's going up against Bob Manning, and we're hoping to have Bob Manning on next week. We're working. That's in the works at this particular moment. And then at 7 o'clock, we have a nice hour-long segment. We can talk a little bit about the educational funding and also put it in regards to municipalities, because we got a nice little round table. We've got Brockton School Committee Vice Chair Tom Minicello, who I know you know.
Tom's yourself. A good guy.
We got from the Southeastern Regional Votech School Committee, Tony Branch. And we have somebody from the municipal side. I had to have someone from the municipality, and that is Alan Frawley. He is on the Middleborough Board of Selectmen, as well as calling in will be South Shore Votech Superintendent and Director, Dr. Tom Hickey. So, another Hanson guy. So,
yes.
That's the lineup. So, why don't we do this? Is it too early, Ben, to jump into traffic? I'm going to cruise into the WATD Traffic Center, although I suspect there probably isn't a lot of traffic, seeing it is a bit of a holiday here in Massachusetts. It's being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. And awaiting you on the other side should be one Lisa DeMilo. Lisa, you there?
I am, Kevin. How are you? You are absolutely right. There's very light volume out there right now. The expressway southbound's just slow passing Columbia Road. Northbound's a speed limit ride all the way in. Route 3 is wide open in both directions. The Bourne and Sagamore bridges are moving along, as are routes 24 and 44. This report is sponsored by Compassion International. You can change the world for a child in extreme poverty through Compassion International. Just text CHILD to 83393 to find out how. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Jeffrey, I love Easter. It's my favorite holiday.
No more fish and chip Fridays.
And I can have chocolate again.
The weather's getting better.
The flowers are starting to bloom.
I make the best pancakes. It's an easy meal.
Mmm, chocolate chip pancakes.
Chocolate chip waffles.
Mmm, the kids are playing in the yard.
Speaking of the yard, I think it's time for a cigar.
Happy Easter from our family to yours.
Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford. Backyard.
The kids are out playing in the backyard.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi. My name is Bob Hayes, and I'm a co-host tonight. We are very, very proud to have State Rep Josh Cutler with us this evening to talk about several different funding changes to education and to several other things up at Capitol Hill. So, Josh, thanks for being here tonight.
Nicely done.
So it's like he knows what he's doing.
I think he knows what he's doing, yeah.
I think he knows absolutely what he's doing. It's scary. You should have like a cable show or something. That
there
could
you
be
go.
Real, that could be really
does
cool.
The name Wally Pip come to mind?
Sure. Or
get that reference?
I do. Or we can call it, how about Bring It On?
There you go.
That could be a great show.
Kevin, would you like to be a guest?
I'd love to.
There you go.
Wait, maybe I already was.
Couple of times. All right, on to funding.
On to funding. Well, I know just a couple of days ago, you proudly posted on social media that you had a lot of good news to unpack in regards to what the House Ways and Means had put forth for the budget.
So, yes. So, Kevin and Bob, thank you. This is our busy time up at the State House working on our state budget. The House comes after the governor, and just this past week, the House Ways and Means Committee, which I'm pleased to sit on, released our blueprint for the budget for FY20. And we had an opportunity then to file the whole pile of amendments to try to make it even better. And next week, when we come back, we will be diving in and into floor debate on the budget, and wrapping up. So lots going on, as I said, lots to unpack. I think one of the highlights, and of course, you know, I want to say preface this by saying no budget is a perfect budget, and we recognize that, and because we have to live within our fiscal constraints. We can't always fund everything to the extent that we want to. But I do think we made some really good investments this year, and particularly in the area of education. We did increase Chapter 70 aid, which is the primary way we finance our local schools, up to $5.12 billion, which is a $200 million increase over last year, and actually almost $18 million more than the governor's budget that was released earlier this year. So that encompasses a lot of different spectrum of issues, but essentially we are seeking to implement some of the recommendations of a commission that looked at our foundation budgets recently and found they were inadequate in a number of areas, including healthcare costs, special education costs, English as a second language, and low-income students. And so we're trying to raise up some of those school districts. One of the things that I've consistently been working on, and we've had great bipartisan support across the South Shore here, is something called the minimum aid increment, which is a way that many school districts in our region, including Whitman-Hanson, including, frankly, all of the school districts in my district, do get their funding increases from year to year. And Governor Baker had come out with a level of $20 per pupil in his budget plan, and we were able to increase that number to 30 in the House Ways and Means budget that came out, as I said, just this past week. So that's been one area. There's a lot of other areas, other line items, in addition to Chapter 70 that impact our local schools and our local towns. Some of them, Bob is a school committee chairman. Whitman-Hanson is very well versed in all these, but the Circuit Breaker Program, which helps to fund special education costs, regional school transportation, which for regional schools such as Whitman-Hanson or Silver Lake or some of the other regional schools that are out there, that is a reimbursement program to help defray the costs of transporting students and busing. And we're able to get both of those line items up higher than they have been in the past. So some good progress, I would say, on the budget in terms of local aid. Still, obviously, a lot of progress needs to be made. And I will say that this term, there's been a particular focus on education funding. I don't think that's news to anyone out there listening. There's been a lot of talk about this, and I think I never like to make predictions, but I think there's a very strong likelihood we're going to see a major bill coming forward this term regarding school funding. Obviously, the devil's in the details, and we'll be looking really hard about what and how that is achieved. But I think there's a broad consensus, from the Governor Baker's administration, from the House, the Senate, Democrats, Republicans, that this is something we need to prioritize and do a better job on. And so I think we'll see that in this term. I'm optimistic, and hopefully we can have a all of us collectively here in the South Shore can help shape that in a way that's going to benefit our schools.
I think the one thing I want to ask you, one notation is you and I have had regular conversations, seems, at this time of year since you've been in office. It wasn't too long ago that we were talking about you raising this up from $20 per pupil and setting it at 50 or 60. This might have been 2 or 3 years ago. And you helped me to understand is that every year when the budget is put together, formulated, that you may have been successful during the fiscal budget to get set at a $40 or $50 or $60, but that it goes right back down to $20 to start again.
Right. So it is that is exactly the challenge, Kevin, and our folks, on the front lines, on the school committees and our teachers and so forth, understand this firsthand. And that's one of the reasons why, we've tried actually have a bill that would set $50 per pupil as the foundation, as sort of the floor, so that we didn't have this, seems like an annual battle to increase that. The good news is that some of the major education funding legislation that I just spoke about, including the Promise Act, which is one of the leading bills that's out there that I know our teachers, Mass Teachers Association, is very much in favor of, would also set $50 as the floor. That would be a big help, I know, to our school committee folks. It's not a princely sum, but it's going to at least ensure that they can have inflationary increases to keep up with the cost of inflation, just for, having a level service budget year to year. So it is a challenge. It is something we unfortunately have to do every year, and that's why it's so important that we do it every year.
Bob, you got a question?
Kevin, so the people that are listening might realize what we're talking about here. Every year, in fact, 1 year, I believe it was 2 years ago, Josh and State Rep Josh Cutler and Jeff Deal and Senator Brady were at a Whitman Hanson school committee meeting and signed a bill, I believe we're going to call it, bringing it up, and had many other, they sponsored this particular bill, and they were very instrumental, and they got it done, and it was at $50. So the people,
that's the one that I did mention.
Right. Yeah, so the $50, what that means to a school district is if you have roughly 4,000 students, which Whitman Hanson did at the time,
right.
You would get an additional $50 per student times 4,000. So it's not, you know, when people hear the term $20 or $25 or $30, some people go, "Yeah, what are you going to do? Buy lunch with that money?" But when it's times
incrementally, though, it's
right.
It's
when it's times 4,000 students, it makes a big, big difference, and it really helps in funding education. As Josh said, he's a big supporter of it, and we have, as we were kidding when we opened the show, Fred Small is our legislative aide at Whitman Hanson, and he is constantly calling Josh and making sure that he's aware of our inequities in funding. And Josh is very patient, and he tries very, very hard to get these things done. I'm right or wrong, Josh?
I mean, you're right. No,
it's a battle. Josh comes to school committee meetings, and I give him a lot of credit because for years, and I've been on this committee for many years, we saw no state reps for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And when Josh became a state rep, he comes to the meetings. He walks the walk if he talks the talk.
Well, I want to just jump in and give some credit to my colleagues because, you know, we really, it is something that is a South Shore delegation. We are all united. You know, it doesn't matter what party you're from. We all are united on this. And anytime we've had an effort to increase these minimum aid, whether it's Representative Deal or Representative Sullivan or Representative Cantwell and Representative Coulter, you name it, Joe Moschino, Kathy Lenatra, Dave DeCoste, we've all been united in advancing that. So it really is a whole delegation and a whole county that's been very much supporting this. And obviously in our Senate side as well, Senator Brady, Senator DiMaceo, Senator O'Connor, been great as well.
Again, we're speaking with the state representative representing the 6th Plymouth District. Josh Cutler is here. He is our guest. So you were able to get a little bit of a bump in regards to per pupil expenditures. What else in regards to?
We did, and of course that hasn't stopped us from asking for more.
As you should.
That's what we do.
Sure.
And so we have, and in fact, I filed the amendment asking for a further increase. And you know, we file a lot of amendments, and we don't expect that they're all going to be approved and get through. But we keep pushing, keep trying to advance the ball in whatever way we can. So, and that's a process that'll get underway. It's already underway. That will continue in earnest next week when the House takes up the budget on the floor, and those, you know, whatever 1,000 number of amendments that are filed will be reviewed, and we'll again make a push and try to make some increases wherever we can find
expecting
that
lengthy debate.
Yeah, usually, you know, the budget process, it usually runs over 3 or 4 days, mm-hmm. and it does, you know, it can run, sometimes we're there till, you know, 11 o'clock at night or so. It really kind of comes in fits and starts. You know, I enjoy the process just to kind of help to have us play a small role in helping to shape how our state funds its top priorities.
You want to talk a little bit about the Student Art Show? I know you've been displaying photos whenever you can, whether it's on your website or on social media. How's that going?
Yeah, we just actually wrapped up our 7th annual, our 7th annual 6th Plymouth District Student Art Show. Mm. You say that 3 times fast. And we had, this is an annual event that I've been doing since I've been elected, highlighting the art of local high school students in my district. We had, it seems like every year we have a record turnout. We had a record turnout again this year. We had over 84 students who entered the competition, and all of their works were put on display up at the State House, up on the 4th floor, where thousands of folks file by on a regular basis. We had a panel of expert judges who handed out awards, and we had some terrific, terrific artwork from high school students in all 3 of the towns that I represent. It really is impressive for someone who's artistically challenged, shall we say, to see what these kids can come up with. It's fantastic. And I can tell you that I've had other reps and other folks who sort of walked by who've commented. They've remarked the same kind of thing. You know, these are high school kids. It's really, really is impressive. So,
Where do you get a lot of where does it seem like the artwork is coming from? Are you getting more from maybe Duxbury or Pembroke or Hanson?
I have to say, every year it's a little different. This year, actually, Pembroke had the most number of entries. Okay. I think the prior year was Whitman Hanson. So it just sort of seems to rotate around naturally. We obviously would want to have a lot of entries from all the towns, but it does every year. One town seems to take the step forward to enter more students.
Kevin, if you've never seen it, it's a pretty impressive show that goes on up there. It really is. It's impressive when you walk around and you look, and people do look and they say, these are high school students. It's crazy how good it is.
It's interesting you bring up art, and I'm going to kind of combine two things. You being the one-time publisher of the Whitman Hanson Express?
Yes.
Actually found an old Whitman Hanson Express. You were on Main Street. The Cranberry...
1000 Main Street.
Oh, yeah.
1000 Main Street. You were standing out front. You had salt... Salt and pepper
hair.
Was it
dark then?
Shaking hands. It was like 2009 or somewhere in that area. I actually was stopping over there to speak with one of the editors, and went in, and there's a gentleman named Paul Krimi who has decorated. He's got paintings. This is like a business plaza, so to speak. Walk in, and his paintings are everywhere. So it's just interesting. We're talking about art and connecting it with a photo I saw of you from 10 years ago in this building and talking about arts. Intriguing.
What a segue, Kevin.
It's a hell of a segue.
You are a master.
Well, and also knowing that you're, you know, somebody who loves newspapers and loves the town of Hanson, you love your district equally, but also knowing that you're an author.
Yes, I am. Yes. Mobtown Massacre.
How's that going? How are book sales? How is that being received?
Kevin, we're not looking for book sales. We're looking for book gifts. What are you talking about?
You're sales. Looking for a book gift.
So folks may be aware that I did publish a book that just recently came out called Mobtown Massacre, which is about a gentleman named Alexander Hanson, who is a fiery Federalist newspaper editor circa 1812 from the state of Maryland. And through an interesting tale, the little town of Hanson, Massachusetts came to be named after him, which is what originally sparked my interest in learning more about this gentleman. And back in 1812, he was quite the character, and he wrote a series of editorials against the War of 1812 that really made people in Baltimore really mad, and they tried to kill him, basically, and silence his newspaper. And he, instead of retreating, he fought back. And in fact, he was almost killed himself, but he did survive the incident, which later became known as the Mobtown Massacre, and actually gave the city of Baltimore its nickname as Mobtown. And so I wrote a book about that whole incident, and have been having a blast doing some book tours and book signings, including recently one in at the Hanson Library.
Did you want to follow that up?
Well, it's an amazing history of a little small town, and it is crazy that Josh does represent us and authored a book. So that's probably, if we were talking to Hansonite Bruce Young, who was a historian of Hanson.
Yes.
He would be able to tell you some of this history, and I know that he would be more
very gleeful in doing it, too.
Oh, not even a question.
I've learned a lot about Hanson history from Bruce.
Oh, there's not even a question about it.
So. Bruce was around back then, so.
Well, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that, but I read parts of Josh's book when I was doing a fundraiser at Camp Kewaunee, and there was a couple of them there people were bidding on. So I had the opportunity to read some of it, and it's pretty interesting. It's a good read for anybody who's a Hansonite or wants to be a
history buff.
It's got a lot of history. And
what did it take the research to do to kind of pull this together and tell a story?
Yeah, so you know, I spent kind of nights and weekends kind of time whenever I had a little extra time working on it. And really I started about 3 years ago. So it's been a long time project. A couple times had to travel down to Baltimore to look at the archives and some of the original letters that Hanson had written. That was really fun to see what, you know, everyone wrote letters in those days. So it's nice to, sometimes they're hard to decipher. Handwriting's a little bit tough, but, you know, reading what people were talking about then was really fascinating, and it kind of opened up a window into, you know, a time in our nation's history that was, you know, pretty important. And so it was, I've really enjoyed it, and it's fun to go around and talk and share about the book, and I'm having a blast doing it.
Now, how many of these author talks have you done? Was that your first one, or have you done a couple?
So I have, that was I believe that was the first one. I did one in Baltimore, actually, because you know, a lot of the action takes place in Baltimore, as well as here because of the Hansen connection and because Massachusetts, being at the time a very much a Federalist state, Hansen was a hero in New England. He was battling the Democratic Republicans and opposing the war, and everybody in Massachusetts thought that was terrific. And so he came up here, and he was a hero, and he was celebrated as such. In fact, he was here in the South Shore. He went and took a fishing trip in Hingham Harbor at one point with Josiah Quincy and some other prominent folks. So I do have a series of book talks coming up. I'm doing one at the Pembroke Historical Society, the Scituate Historical Society, doing a book signing at the Hingham Barnes & Noble. I think those are the three events that I have in the immediate calendar, but I'm looking to do others as well.
I think it's interesting that you got this tour going on. Now, if folks want to find out, let's say they want to flock to your book signing or they want to come to one of these author talks, do you have these posted on joshcutler.com?
I do, Kevin. Why, thank you for the question. In fact, the nice, great little bookstore at Storybook Cove at the Hanover Mall is now carrying the book as well, and they have autographed copies. So, Bob, if you need one, go down to the Storybook Cove. I have a website, mobtownmassacre.com, where I'm listed the various events that I'll be speaking at, mobtownmassacre.com.
Are you gonna transcribe this into an audiobook by any chance, or can I get it on Kindle? Audiobook?
You can get it on Kindle.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's available on Amazon. The audiobook thing, I don't know. I need a good voice to be able to do that. I don't know. Does anybody know that? Maybe
Bob,
Kevin?
Bob?
Bob,
maybe. Oh, you want somebody who can enunciate and has better diction than me.
You gotta try to have a deep voice, so that's pretty good.
Josh, I'm trying to figure out how Massachusetts had a Federalist and all this, and what has changed over the last couple of hundred years here. It seems like things have changed dramatically.
Well, I mean, the Republicans ruled the roost for a while, and so the Democrats came up, and then the Whigs.
Right, so we had the Democratic Republicans then.
Right.
Which, oh, okay.
Are not to be confused with either party today, because right. It didn't.
So it's been a change.
Right, so the people refer to them as Republicans, but they're not the Republicans of today. In fact, right. That's a whole different party that was founded.
Well, even the Republicans of today aren't necessarily Republicans of today.
I'm gonna let that one lie. But
boy,
you say the same thing about the
historically
Democrats.
Historically speaking, there's no.
You get a lot of divide. Yeah, both parties have a lot of divide at this particular time.
Josh, so when you were down reading the letters, you know, they must have been written in cursive.
Yes. Brought John Buckley with you.
I should have, yeah.
John's a history buff.
Yeah, in fact, I would have to sit. It would take me a good hour to get through a letter because I'd have to really decipher what the word was, and sometimes I couldn't
phrasing
decipher it. And then you know, people spoke a little bit differently then, so that was it was like a little detective work.
It's like reading King Lear.
Yeah, so it wasn't keyboard warrior type talk like we get today.
Right,
a little different,
indeed. Well, Rob Cutler, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Anything you want to say in closing, sir?
Just thank you. Greetings to the listeners. Thank you to you guys for doing a great work that you're doing here on the show. And thanks to WATD for doing a great job covering the South Shore.
There you go.
Josh, thank you for what you do for school districts. We need you to keep up the hard work. It seems like there is never enough funding. The overhead keeps going up and up and on and on and on. And then it ends up that way. So thank you for what you do, and Senator Brady, and I know that State Rep now Allison Sullivan has come on board. So if they're listening, please keep up the hard work, because all these districts definitely need the money.
I put the bullhorn and segue us out to the commercial.
All right.
Thanks. You are listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Up next, Kevin DiMarzio, candidate for Abington Selectman, on deck. Don't go anywhere.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Are you or someone you know struggling with the loss of a child, parent, or another family member? Hope Floats Healing and Wellness Center of Kingston, Massachusetts will host its 6th annual Memory Walk Saturday, April 27th to support grieving families throughout the South Shore. The walk begins at 10 a.m. at 4 Elm Street with registration beginning at 8:30 a.m. To register online, go to www.hopefloatswellness.org or call 781-936-8068. The 5K walk to Kingston's Harbor is followed by lunch and raffles on the Hope Floats lawn. Participants are encouraged to help sponsor the event in memory of loved ones and to encourage friends and relatives to sponsor their walk. Hope Floats is a public charity now in its 10th year of operation, providing bereavement and wellness services to all community members of the South Shore. We'll see you there.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi. My name is Bob Hayes, and I'm a co-host with him this evening, and it's always a pleasure to be here with him. Tonight, we have Kevin DiMaggio, who is a candidate for the Abington Board of Selectmen. Kevin, welcome.
Good evening.
Right into the microphone. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kevin.
Oh, good evening. Thank you.
Other than having a great first name, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Kevin DiMaggio, and I'm running for a seat on the Abington Board of Selectmen. I'm 36 years old. I was born and raised in Braintree, and I grew up in Braintree. Now I'm living in Abington with my two children. I have an 11-year-old son, Keegan, and a 7-year-old son, Grady. I'm an 11-year veteran of the Plymouth County Sheriff's Department, where I'm currently hold the rank of lieutenant.
Now, how long ago did you live in Braintree?
So I grew up there, so I haven't been in Braintree probably in about 10 years or so.
Okay. But I was going to say, we heard some sad news that Mayor Sullivan,
yes,
is not going to run. I'm going to have to get him in a couple of times because there was a little bit of a promise that we joked on the air, I would say late last year, that I would be mayor for a day.
Oh, yeah.
That would be pretty cool. I got a lot of changes I would make.
Oh, boy.
But then he would host the show.
There you go.
And he's due to come back, so we're going to get him back in. But no, it's kind of Joe's a great guy, and anytime he's come in, he's given us good conversation about what's going on in the community. And let's not forget, he's a former state representative as well, and so he knows the lay of the land when it comes to not only local politics, but state politics too.
Kev, let's jump right into the nuts and bolts of this. What makes you want to run for selectman in the town of Abington?
Yeah, why?
You know, so I don't know when it started, but I've always had an interest in politics. So from an early age, I was always following it. And, you know, a few years back, working at Sheriff's Department and helping out in different campaigns and whatnot, I really took an interest in it. And, you know, I really wanted to start at the local level. Do something, you know, try to make some change in a town where I'm raising my children and try to leave it, you know, better for them and other people. So,
have you served on any committees or boards, or is this your first go at it?
This is my first go. I did run last year. I ran for selectman. I did lose by a small margin, so, you know, that was a little tough, and it was a learning curve, and now I'm back this year and just going right back. I didn't want to stop, and I want to keep the momentum, if you will.
What are the issues in Abington?
Currently, it feels like there's not a lot of transparency. There's not a lot of accountability. There's, you know, like a breakdown of communication, if you will, and we need to get back to that. We need to make sure that we're getting clear communication out there, precise information, and just holding the town, the departments, and people accountable so that, you know, we can leave our town better for the future.
Are you at liberty to give a couple of examples or given an example of an instance where there has been a lack of transparency, whether it's with a particular board or with a particular item or issue that you're like, why don't we know more about this?
you know, so just meeting people around town and stuff like that, and a lot of their complaints are, you know, oh, I didn't know there was a meeting the other night. You know, where do I find this information? This is not out there. You know, a lot of people around town have issues, you know, with their streets, whether it's a pothole or something broken around town. They don't know who to call. They don't know who to contact. So, you know, it's nice because I'm able to bridge that gap and give these people the direct, you know, the correct direction and get things accomplished. And, you know, that's good. And these people in town, these residents need that. And I just feel that we need to make a better effort at that.
Kevin, are there any political hot topics, you know, stuff that's going on in Abington right now that people are really on? I know that potholes are some of the topics, and that's not like as glamorous as something else that might be going on, although it is very important.
So, I mean, there's a variety of things that have, you know, maybe are going on in town, but, you know, it seems that there's, with the police department, there's a lot of turnover with the police officers, and a lot of people have questions, and there's no answers. And it seems like just year after year, you know, the same people make promises, and then nothing happens, and we just continue going in this repetitive cycle. So, you know, questions need to be asked, and we need to dig in, and we need to look at these things, and we need to make sure we're finding an answer and we're fixing that problem.
Well, as far as with the police department, you feel it's a contractual issue? I mean, what is it like financially in town? What's your understanding in regards to, because I think every community, there's usually a community, a collective bargaining agreement. Usually you got the town administrators, someone from the selectmen. There's usually a conversation that's held with the union higher ups to figure out, is that possibly a problem that maybe that the package, you know, the financial package isn't attractive enough to keep your police officers?
So that, you know, that was one thing, that the police officers went over 3 years without a contract. And I don't know exactly why they went that long, but, you know, what was the, you know, underlying issue with it, but they did just get a contract. And
but was it retro? I would think that a contract like that would be retro.
You know, I don't know if they got retro or not. I don't know if that was part of the deal, but it was so long without a contract that they signed this and they went right back into negotiations. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, they're still waiting for a contract. They haven't got one from going back in now. So there seems to be some sort of issue there. As far as the town, I know initially we were looking at $1.5 million budget gap. So I know they are working on that. But if you look at our police department, you know, we don't have really detectives. We don't have a lot of officers in the force. Our most veteran officer that was on just left for Brockton Police, and he was only on for 8 years, and he was a senior officer in town.
Well, with all due respect, and I am saying this with all due respect, if you seen the recent report in regards to the top paid individuals in the city of Brockton, you had one police officer who's making $328,000. But wow. That's also, but in defense, not only is there the salary is there, but there's also if they're doing details, whether it's with public or private. But I can see where it would be attractive to go to Brockton, where, you know, when you climb in rank, you can have a decent salary, and then also have the opportunities to work a road detail and make some real nice hourly wages.
Absolutely. You know, I did hear, I think there was, I think we have, you know, roughly 20 police officers, but I think in the last decade or so, we've had, I think, close to 60 officers, you know, whether it's retire, resign, move on, transfer. So, you know, to have a department turn over 3 times, that's brings some questions up.
Kevin, there's been some questions about the departure of Dory. I would say that she was the administrative assistant to the town administrator, and she's been there for many, many years. She just retired?
Yeah, so that was one. It kind of came out of left field. All of a sudden, there was an article, and she was gone. I'm still trying to figure out what happened there. Dory has been with the town forever. She's been there long before the current town manager, and if you ever watch any meetings or attend the meetings, she knows everything. You know, she is the go-to person in town. If you talk to someone in town, they want to talk to her. She knows she can get answers for you. And so that was kind of shocking that, you know, out of nowhere, she just retired. Something doesn't sound right with that.
Well, I thought I read that she had served as interim a couple of different times in her capacity, which is interesting.
Yeah, she has. And I don't know why she was never officially the town manager, but yeah, she's been the interim, and Yeah, she's been the assistant town manager for years. But
could it be she just retired? I mean, I don't know how old Dory is, and I wouldn't get into the ever asking that question to anyone. But I mean, I know she's
been better.
Yeah, I know she's been there for a long time. Maybe, yeah. Maybe she just retired.
Sure.
You know, there was a newspaper article that came out that did say that she wanted to try different things and move on. So, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, I wish her the best of luck. And, you know, it's a sore loss for our town, I think.
Help me here. 3-member or 5-member board?
5-member.
5-member board. All right. So you, if you're successful, you'd be one of 5. Talk to me about working within a group. And, I mean, would you be the guy who's the naysayer? Because I've seen many a meetings, where, you know, in many board makeups where there's that one person who wants to be the no vote no matter what. It doesn't want to be somebody who wants to work. Are you the person that, you know, will have the ideas and speak up when you need to speak up? Talk to me about if you are successful.
Yeah, so I think a lot of this ties into my job as a lieutenant. So, I mean, every day I have to manage numerous correction officers. I have to manage incarcerated inmates, and I also have to, you know, write reports, respond to incidents, perform personnel evaluations, and make sure that everyone goes home at the end of the shift safe, and also that those reports are correct. So, part of that I would bring over with me. But yes, I feel that I have, you know, I can bring fresh set of eyes to the town. I'm young, so I'm energetic. I want to learn things. I want to, in looking at the board now, and you know, someone comes up and talks, and the board really doesn't have any questions. They don't ask anything. And a lot of residents from town, you know, even just, they just want them to ask a question, anything. But I do feel that part of my job is being an investigator. So I'm not afraid to ask tough questions. I'm not afraid to get an answer. And that's what I think the residents need, and we should be getting that for them.
So you feel they need a voice?
I do.
Okay. Give me some ideas or initiatives that you'd like to see implemented if you happen to become a part of the board.
So a big one that I've been looking at is trying to create an Abington Chamber of Commerce. You know, trying to bring, let people know that Abington's open for business. You know, bring it to a local level so that, you know, we know what's best for our town. And you know, we need to fill some empty storefronts. We need to bring some business into town and some different things like that. I think that's a huge thing that we should be focusing on. As far as anything else is, we have a beautiful gem of a, you know, state park, Ames Knoll State Park, mm-hmm. in our town. And it's gone, you know, kind of by the wayside over years, so it needs some attention. And I got to give a shout out to Rick Collins in town. He's really been at the forefront of it. We've created a committee, and they're talking about creating a Friends of Ames Knoll State Park group to really get out there and fix it up. So surprisingly enough, there's a park service day on election day on Saturday, April 27th. So I'm going to carve out some time out of the polls and go over and try to help clean up the park, because, you know, it's I value that, and I think the residents really want to see it.
Bob?
Kevin, Abington's an amazing community. I've had some first-hand knowledge being there for many, many years, and it's a fabulous community. It's changed like all social communities have over the years. Talking about parks and different things and having a chamber of commerce, I think Abington and Whitman and a lot of places that have a Stop and Shop have got on the map in the last few
years. You had to go down that road, didn't you?
Well, I'm saying this in a positive way.
Okay.
It brings forward how towns stick together, and Abington's one of those towns where the people are very, very tight, and they stick together. What's your take on what's going on with the Stop and Shop dilemma in Abington?
So I've driven past it every morning going to work. I drive past there and you know, going to different stores of the bank. I see them out there. So just recently over the weekend, I stopped by there. I ordered some pizzas from Brothers Roast Beef and brought
good
some pizzas
food
down. Yeah, and
Picked up a couple of votes. Keep going.
Yeah, just went down there, and they were happy. They'd be getting Box of Joes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but the pizza was a hit. It was probably gone in 20 seconds. They were coming over. But just talking to them, and a lot of them are local people. They're, you know, within town. They're all working in the store in Abington, and, you know, they just want, they're asking for what's right and what's fair. So, you know, you got to show your support for them. You know, growing up, my father worked in a union, and many times I remember him on the picket lines,
yep.
In a strike. So I know what it's like for them. So, you know, I want to go down, show my support, let them know I'm behind them, and, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, they can come to an agreement.
What would you, knowing that town elections are nonpartisan, not party affiliated, but Would you find, how would you consider yourself in regards to, you talk about the town is, has a little bit of a budget deficit at this particular time. Are you a guy who would say, we should cut as much as we need to? Or are you a guy who says, let's do an override?
Absolutely not on the override. We need to really, if we're looking at an override, then we really need to look at our budget. We need to do like a top to bottom look at our budget. We need to see what's going on, where this money's going, and we need to take a hard look ourselves because we shouldn't be looking at an override.
I'm going to go back to the Stop and Shop thing because you mentioned your dad, Kevin. My dad, union guy for 40 years, visiting him in Attleboro this weekend, and drove by a Stop and Shop, and we were going to grab something for him, and had to go but 2 miles out of our way to Shaw's, and they were slammed. I mean, they were just, and I walked up to one of the cats. I'm like, God, is it usually this busy on a Sunday? He goes, no, but thanks to Stop and Shop up the road, we're busier. Like, oh, okay. Just curious. But the one thing I will note is there isn't a robot that's wandering in between the aisles of Shaw's these days. So that's true. The one thing that Shaw's has going for it, so to speak.
It is amazing.
It is amazing. Kevin, if folks want to find out more about you or your campaign, how can they do that? And also remind them as to when the big election is.
So I have multiple social media. So on, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram, Kevin for Abington. You can search that. I also have a website, www.kevinforabington.com. But any of those three avenues, you can find plenty of information. And if anyone wants to know more, please reach out to me. Whether it's a meeting for coffee, talking online, however it may be, I'd love to talk to you.
And is 27th, when is the big election?
Yes, so Saturday, April 27th. So it's right around the corner. We're going to be up the Abington Middle High School from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. will be the town election. And I humbly ask for your vote that day if you're coming out.
There he is, Kevin DiMarzio, our guest, seeking your vote for Abington Selectman. Best of luck to you and all candidates in the race. And we thank you for stopping by and choosing us to sit down and talk about your campaign.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
You got it. We're going to step aside. We have exhausted, Bob, the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Can you believe it?
I believe it, Kevin, but tell the people on Monday Night Talk not to go anywhere because we are going to have a roundtable talk about education, funding, municipalities. We have some very interesting people coming up. Vice Chair from Brockton, Tom Minicello.
And more Bob.
And more of me.
And more Bob. Yeah.
So stay tuned.
More Monday Night Talk in just a moment here at 95.9 WATD.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
If you're considering going back to school, ask yourself the following questions. Do you need the flexibility to take classes on your schedule? Do you have college credits you need transferred? Do you want to earn a quality degree from a world-renowned university? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Arizona State University is the perfect school for you. Arizona State University offers over 150 highly ranked degree programs 100% online. You'll learn the same degree as you would on campus from wherever you are on your schedule. Plus, ASU Online accepts most transfer credits. For information, text ACE to 35517. Learn for yourself why the Wall Street Journal ranks ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates and why 87% of ASU grads are recruited within 90 days of graduation. Learn to grow, learn to succeed, and learn to thrive at Arizona State University. To learn more about ASU Online degrees, text ACE to 35517. That's ACE to 35517.
For the last 12 years, Prime Angels Foundation has been able to provide our special needs community with their own unique prom, but they can't do it alone. Join the Prime Angels Foundation for their next fundraiser on April 20th, 6:30 till 11 p.m. at the Pembroke Country Club, featuring a performance from Divas with a Twist, plus live and silent auctions, raffles, and more. Tickets are $30 and can be purchased by visiting primeangels.org. That's primeangels.org. Prime Angels, serving the special needs community of the South Shore for the last 12 years.
Hi, I'm Stacy Curtin, co-director of the Pembroke Firehouse Food Pantry. Please join us on Saturday, April 27th for our pantry's Spring Fling. This event, which is being held at the Pembroke Middle School, will feature over 60 vendors and craft tables. We also have a table full of great raffles and a 50-50. All proceeds will benefit Pembroke's Firehouse Food Pantry. Again, we will be at the Pembroke Middle School, which is located on 559 School Street, Route 27, on April 27th from 10 to 3. Thank you, and we'll see you there.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Kevin Tachi, and I'm his co-host tonight, Bob Hayes. And we have an interesting group of people in the studio this evening. We're going to do some talking about educational funding and sort of have a round table and kick around urban versus suburban and what goes on in Brockton. We have Vice Chair Tom Minicello here with us, and we're going to discuss some of that. They also have an intern superintendent, and we have some other people in the
who else? Come
studio,
on.
In the studio with us.
Who's next to Tom? You step up.
Tony Branch is here with us this evening.
And what is and Bishop Tony Branch, and Tony is from where?
He cool. is...
That's my bad. Listen.
Southeastern Regional...
There you go.
Yeah, he's the Brockton representative.
Tony must know Joe Dutcher.
Of course, Joe's my best friend.
Yeah, Joe Dutcher and I are friends. Yeah, you know, Joe's in the car business, and you can tell that.
He's been trying to get me to join the Republicans.
I'll have to talk to Joe about that.
Yeah.
And we also have South Shore VOTEC Superintendent Director Tom Hickey is going to be calling in.
And
we have Middleborough Selectman Alan Frawley with us also, and he's going to be discussing some of that, as I had a daughter that taught at Middleborough High School, so it's going to prove some interesting talk, so stay right here with us.
And I want to say, we're going to make sure we make it fun for Alan, because Alan was here in a dual role, that it's actually he's kind enough to be a part of it as someone speaking on behalf of a municipality when we talk about funding, but we're also going to talk a little bit about, we both like our survivalist shows, and Alan, actually, you were actually on...
I was on one.
And someone that we have talked to, and you might have been on with Stephen Hall?
I think I called in.
How did you and Stephen know each other? You guys were on a show together.
Right. Long before Steve was King of the Forest, he was built to survive with me.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
Built to survive. And so what's interesting, we were going to hopefully at 7:30 have Stephen Hall from Naked and Afraid on.
Right.
And it actually would have completed the circle, because we had Laura Zara on a couple of weeks ago. And Laura and Stephen, they did something differently on Naked and Afraid. And this isn't a part of our roundtable. It's just me going blah, blah, blah. But instead of sending them out to terrain that was hot and cold and rainy, like they sent them up to Alaska.
Right.
You're talking, it's like 30 degrees.
Cold and rainy would have been an uptick.
Yeah, but these two were...
Definitely.
And anybody who's ever watched The Naked and Afraid, other than people not wearing clothing, the idea is to be able to survive and work together as a team. And these two did a fantastic job. So we were going to talk about that at 7:30, but Steven's a busy guy.
To say the least.
So it's good to have you in studio, Alan, as well as Tom Minicello, he's not a stranger, he's been here, and Tony, who has served as co-host.
Not a stranger.
And Bob, of course, is... So let's get this started. Talk a little bit. We'll go around the room and give everybody an opportunity to kind of say what your roles are, where things stand with your individual, whether it's a school committee, community, and dealing with finances. So we'll start with my immediate right. Mr. Branch, you can start first.
No problem. So I'm Tony Branch. I've been on the Southeastern Regional School Committee. I think I'm going in my third year. I was initially appointed by the school committee and the city council, nominated by the mayor, or a combination of both, a couple of years back. And I am serving currently as chair of personnel and as the assistant treasurer of our Southeastern School Committee. So I am a busy, busy guy. But with respect to Chapter 7 funding, of course, there are some concerns. We, on a regional level, have raised our concerns vigorously, not only with the delegation, but also with our statewide association. I know there was a large conversation within SBA, our National School Board Association, around school funding, not only in the Commonwealth, but of course across the country. But yes, there's need for additional dollars. My concern as a member of NEAC, the New England Area Conference, with respect to the NAACP, I'm taking their position, and I also take the position of Senator Chang, who was chair of education, that not only do we need funding, but we also need accountability.
And of course, you have how many member communities are part of Southeast
Nine.
Regional? Nine. Just want to make sure. Okay, we'll go to Alan. Alan, you were Board of Selectmen, but let's not forget you also served as chair from time to time.
Yeah, I think I 3 or 4 terms as chair. I'm in my 3rd 3-year term. I'm in so my 9th year actually just started last week.
Congrats.
Yeah. It's to be honest, the reason I got involved is my kids.
Right.
And my kids are 6 and 9 right now. So obviously I have a vested interest in how our schools perform and how much money we're getting for the funding for that. We're also right about to, actually, we just broke ground on a new $103 million high school. So education funding's an issue, unfortunately, that I know more about than I ever cared to. And it's really, to say that we need more dollars would be an understatement. I ran for state rep last November.
And one 12th of the things, Plymouth, right?
Right. And one of the things that I was trying to learn more and more about was about how the formula for the educational funding, because Middleborough doesn't get enough money. I'm sure I know Brockton doesn't get enough money.
They don't.
I actually had a very nice conversation with Senator Chang the other day about educational funding at another symposium we were at.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I can't believe that we're not spending more money on education. But what you hear is where do we get the money? And it's when I was running, it was one of the questions I asked the Speaker of the House, DeLeo. I said, everybody's talking about, you know, transportation and education. Now that the millionaire's tax has fallen aside,
right,
where are we going to find that new funding? And this, before the election, he said, we're going to have to look at the foundation budget and see what we can do about that. So I'll be interested to see what solutions they come up with and what passes, right, and things like that, because I'm hearing about a gas tax. I like the idea of a millionaire's tax. I think that's coming up again.
You mean automatic gas tax, V2.
Well, yeah. I'm interested in hearing. I'd like to see what they...
And I was incorrect. It was the 12th Bristol.
12th Bristol.
And I said
Bristol
12th,
Plymouth.
Bristol Plymouth. That was my apologies. Because Kathy Lenatra is the state rep of
12th Bristol. Really? I mean 12th.
I got the 12th, so cut me some slack here.
But Kathy also represents Middleborough, a section of Middleborough as well. So
there you go.
Do you see why Alan's in the room? And now we're going to find out why Tom Minicello, who is the vice chair, served as vice chair. How many terms have you been the Ward 1 school committee rep in Brockton?
I've been Ward 1 rep for 12 years.
Wow.
And I've served as vice chair for 10 of those 12 years. So my, I don't know if you should offer me my condolences for that. Or
well, we did off air. We did off air, but if you need us to, at least.
There you go.
Well, when the mayor is not in the room and he usually serves his chair, you are the one who has the gavel. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I basically step in, but the mayor is busy running the city. So I help organize things on the school side, for the most part, when people have issues or complaints, they get funneled through me rather than the mayor. You know, it's something that I find to be important to make sure that the school side is running efficiently and fairly and above board. We have a large budget. We have approximately 17,000 children that attend the schools, and we have over 2,500 employees. So I always tell people it's not the kids that are the issue, it's the adults sometimes not playing fairly with one another or kindly in the sandbox, as they say,
right?
So it's an interesting situation in Brockton with obviously the budget, which everyone here is well aware about. So
yeah, and it'll bear well to have Brockton in the room to talk a little bit, or at least someone from Brockton, because I know that the city has helped lead the discussion in regards to equity in education, taking another look at the state's Ed Reform Act of 1993. And what I'm hoping we could do later on in the discussion is, should we have a second go-around at tackling this now? And it's legislation that's 26 years old, and is it time to revamp it? That again, it's later on in the conversation, not now. A lot more road to travel first, but that's going to be a valuable part of the conversation because we and I want to kind of before I go to you, Bob. We had the governor on last week and had a great conversation with him. And one of the things I did ask him, knowing that he opened up in late March, they had 3 days of hearings with the Joint Committee on Education. Right. And he was the first one up speaking. Oddly enough, you had mentioned about Kerry Rodriguez, who is she's the mom in chief. We were hoping to have her on this evening. Because she was also, I wanted to get
I
her
didn't know
take,
she went.
She did, and she had a whole group of folks, and she was going to be a vital part of this conversation. But that was some of the things that was mentioned. One of the things that the governor did mention was to understanding and knowing that how funding is happening here in the state, something needs to be done. He has said that his administration is working on tackling it, but understands that the formula, there's a problem with the formula and how to tackle things like unfunded mandates, which I want to, folks may not know about unfunded, we're all going to sit here, we're going to talk about that and what needs to happen in regards to that. So I'm going to turn things over to Bob. Bob, who is chairman of the Whitman-Hanson Regional School District. Bob, if you'll kind of share some details.
Kevin, all of the things that the governor is talking about and all of the things that Josh Cutler has talked about, who's our state rep, are all very fundamental to school district. But let's get right to the white elephant in the room. Unfunded mandates. Special education. It's really the biggest part of your budget. I mean, Whitman-Hanson has $8 million worth of unfunded mandates that are funded by $3 million. So the other $5 million is a very difficult thing for the taxpayers to look at, and it changes yearly. And everyone has it. Brockton has it. The demographics of this group is wonderful because we have a municipal side.
Thank you, Bob. I think you just paid me
a vocational side, a regional school district side,
absolutely,
and a city. In the city of Brockton's huge, and they have the same issues. I mean, Tom, you want to talk a little bit about unfunded mandates and when you have busing, the same thing that's not paid for. Regional school districts can't charge for busing. But special education busing, I mean, it's all difficult.
Well, I think the unfunded mandates are definitely a piece of our issues in Brockton. But I would say, with regard to special education, there's basically no cap on what any of the providers to special education students can charge on an annual basis. So what do I mean by that? We have some students that have a very expensive IEP because of their disabilities.
What is an IEP for the folks at home who don't know what it is?
Independent education plan.
Thank you very much.
Based on their particular set of circumstances. So if you have children that are extremely disabled, their annual school bills for programs could be over $100,000, $200,000. And there's no cap, there's no controls really in terms of what these outside providers can charge. And so when municipalities like Brockton or towns like Middleborough or Abington have a child that needs to go to a special program, school for the blind, a child that might have all sorts of issues with regard to physical control, has to be has to have help, going to the bathroom, at an age of 18, 17, we're talking kids that are, but for the grace of God, none of us have to deal with an issue like that. But there are so many parents that have children that are just in such bad shape, unfortunately. But these costs that go along with these students can be huge budget busters. So if you get like a couple of children that are high needs that move into Middleborough, that can destroy Middleborough's budget.
And devastate a budget.
Brockton has it on basically an annual basis. But, when our budget goes up a small percentage a year, some of these providers will charge, 10% more each year, 9% more. There's no cap. So it's really insane. To me, there needs to be some fundamental changes in terms of it's like insurance. If you're a provider, if you're a HMO Blue, and you say to Brockton Hospital or Mass General, we pay $700 for an MRI, but an MRI might be $1,500. Well, if you're going to take the money from, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Harvard Pilgrim, you're going to pay the rate that they are going to pay because they're paying for so many kids. Well, if you're accepting public funding for these students, then it should be the same thing. The state should come in and have a cap on some of these costs across the board so that you can't, you know, have this escalation on an annual basis where your budget just can't sustain it. I mean, so it's really a horrible situation. With regard to unfunded mandates on transportation, because we're a larger school district, we have more students that participate in that sort of thing. And what do I mean by that? Well, there are students who, let's say they come into the district and unfortunately they're displaced through a fire or a loss of housing for, you know, financial reasons.
Earthquake in a third world country.
Right, exactly. So if those students...
It's very real.
Yeah. Well,
it's close to
it certainly happened, you know, a few years back with the Haitian earthquake. But I'm talking about kids that, let's say, lose their housing for a number of reasons, and then the state places them down in Wareham or places them down in Taunton.
Yeah, you're going to pay to transport them.
We, as the district,
have to pay
on a daily basis for that transportation. You know, we guarantee kids a public education, a competent public education, yet districts, you know, like larger districts, you know, incur a lot of funding. I mean, a lot of debt with regard to these types of costs. I mean, to bus a child, or basically it's like a small taxi, you know, an educational taxi program. You know, in Brockton, I think we have a company called Bill's Taxi Service. They do a lot of this. And there's a number of different providers. Mm-hmm. But that's a huge bill every month.
You know, if I could just kind of throw it out there. So Brockton's annual budget, it's kind of grown. I think it's probably going to be $410 million of that. I would think that the school budget's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $200 million. Is that accurate?
Yeah, our budget with grants and all that good stuff is around $200 million.
And that pales in comparison to Middleborough. Now, what is Middleborough's,
the total town budget's about
$80
million.
$80 million. Really good.
And $35 million that go to the school, we don't have any wiggle room, you know, with a $200 million budget like Brockton does. But we face the same problems.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that there's any wiggle room in
Brockton's
budget
at
all.
But we can kind of get into that because I don't think a whole hour is going to be able to quantify some of the issues that Brockton has had, but at least put it in comparison as to what other communities are going through. But as you were saying.
One thing I don't understand, because like I said, Middleborough or any district, you know, we deal with the same problem. If a family moves into our district with somebody who has a high-cost child, I don't understand why that child isn't just covered by the state wherever they live, you know, rather than put that burden on, because you don't want to cringe when somebody with high needs moves into your community, but that's what you have to do. You don't want to say, I hope that person doesn't move here. You should be able to welcome them with open arms. But the state, I honestly believe that the state should have a fund that funds all these children, no matter where they live, because their quality of education shouldn't depend on where they live. Unfortunately, larger municipalities like Brockton or Taunton or Fall River, they have a tendency, because of the economic demographics of it, they have more high need students. So their school budget gets hit.
It's related to our population.
Things.
We're a city of almost 100,000 people.
Right, and it's necessarily.
How many are in Middleborough?
On a good day, we have about 23,000.
Yeah, that's a part of the high school. I mean,
right.
High school's about 43,000.
But if a $100,000 child moves into our district, it hurts quite a bit.
Right. No, and I just want to take a moment. I know Tony.
I'm in totally agreement with him. I think that a part of it is I'm not sure why we don't have like the MBTA's ride sharing program be.
At the disposal of a community?
Exactly, at the disposal of a community. So that cost is 100% to the Commonwealth, not to the local municipalities. But I think that they're also, with respect to unfunded mandate, I think that we're not doing a very good job around technology, but I digress.
I want to bring in one more voice joining us by the phone line is Dr. Tom Hickey. He is the South Shore Regional Vocational. You changed the name of it, didn't you? What is it now, Tom?
So, hi, Kevin. It's the longest business card ever written. Yeah. So
you guys just changed it, though, right?
Yeah. Well, we're South Shore Regional Vocational Technical High School.
Yeah.
Why don't we say South Shore?
Yeah. Okay. South Shore Vo-Tech. Welcome to the conversation. Tony Branch, who is here. He is a representative of Southeastern Regional. Knowing that we wanted to have a little bit of balance here, I thought I'd have you on as a superintendent director. I think we're kind of serving all purposes here. If you could weigh in with the conversation that we're having right now, we've leapfrogged right into it because of Bob, and that is his unfunded
Kevin.
How are you? Unfunded mandates, which it's wreaking havoc when it comes to whether it's a school budget, a municipal budget. If you want, just a little introduction to yourself, and if you want to kind of leap right in on the unfunded mandates, feel free to.
Sure. Yeah. So I serve as superintendent director at South Shore. I've been in this role for 8 years, and I've been at the school for 24 as a teacher and principal and curriculum director and now superintendent. And we serve 8 towns in northern Plymouth County, Whitman, Hanson, Abington, Rockland, Norwell, Cohasset, Scituate, excuse me. And we are absolutely in agreement with all that your guests have mentioned earlier tonight. I mean, there has to be some additional relief from the state, because when it's moved to the local level, it's about departments all having pressing needs, and the unfunded mandates that have already been discussed and have been articulated by various groups, superintendents group, school committee group, are clear, and they are pressing, and they're not going away. Whether you need funding to implement curriculum frameworks that are tied to high stakes tests, certainly the special education commentary is spot on. And even in the area of school building assistance, I think all the folks that you have on tonight have probably had some experience with being told by the MSBA that there simply isn't enough funding to maintain modern 21st century schools. And that is something that we certainly have been dealing with at South Shore. And there's just not enough funding to ensure that when schools need to modernize, when fixed assets need to be maintained, that there's going to be an opportunity to do that without breaking the bank at the local level.
Tony, did you want to weigh in?
No, I think that for me, as not only being a school committee member, but also just in general being an activist, I find that there's just not the willpower there to make these changes. The willpower there to spend this money. And often people say, well, you know, Bishop, is the issue of diversity or discrimination? Some of it is that, but when I hear my colleague over here talk about his particular city or town, that's not the issue. It's just that the willpower. So I go back to how upset Senator Chang was with respect to when she'd worked since 2014 with the Democratic Party to try to get a bill that made sense into law with respect to Chapter 70 funding, and she was unsuccessful. And we're here today talking about it still. So where is the political will to really make changes in terms of the funding? And the other thing, too, we talk about the mandates a lot, but what I hear from teachers and what I hear from people off the record is that healthcare costs, that a lot of this is healthcare costs, and that should be moved to the state. But I don't hear a lot of people talking about that.
It's definitely a good point, Alan.
Just to speak to your point, because I agree with you 100%. There doesn't seem to be the will to raise taxes. I'm putting my hands up in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And that nobody wants to raise taxes. I think that's a disingenuous stance to take, because when you pass that cost on to the municipalities,
exactly,
we have to raise your taxes.
Mm.
We can only go up 2.5, but we...
Right.
Municipalities, we find ways to raise that money,
right?
And it's all coming out of the same pocket.
Right.
So the idea that the state legislators aren't raising taxes is that's a farce,
right?
You know, what they're doing is they're passing the buck
to the local level,
right? So they need to stand up and support their districts.
And I want to throw it back to Tom real quick. And Tom had mentioned about the Mass School Building Authority, and it's interesting enough is that Alan was talking about that they're building a new high school. How long did you have to wait in queue before
we lobbied very hard for about 6 years.
Okay. And Tom, I know that Tom has been working. No, the Social Votech has.
Percentage of funding, though.
Yeah, what did you get?
Yeah,
what did you get?
Less than 50%.
Left you, yeah. There was a day and age when it was higher than that.
So a municipality of 28,000.
I know.
It's spending $50 million. Over $50 million for a new high school.
So then Tom has, what he's dealing with over at Social Votech is that they have an older part of the building and a newer part of the building. Mm. You have the original from 50 years ago and then a newer part that was built. And that they've had ongoing conversations where they've had to put forth paperwork to do upgrades. Am I correct, Tom?
That's right, Kevin. Like many school districts, we've applied most recently our fifth time, not looking for a new school, but looking to modernize what we have and maybe a modest addition. But in the meantime, we've got to make sure that the school is safe and properly functioning. But it is certainly a long wait.
And then I turn to Bob, because Bob was, serving as chair. You've seen where there was a conversation about tearing down two schools and building a new one, and then that was something that the voters voted down, spending money to build a new one. Now, then this is in the town of Hanson, now there was your new superintendent, Jeff Simonak, put forth an initiative saying that we got to fill out paperwork and get it in queue because we want to build a new middle school. Mm. But we're looking down the road 5 years, but we're going to start the process now in order to be able to be a part of the conversation. How frustrating is that for all of you to have to go through that?
Well, Kevin, it's a very long process. As you know, the school committee just voted to put an SOI and a statement of interest the Whitman Middle School. And it's a difficult thing. Whitman Hanson built a brand new high school 14 years ago and all the stars were aligned.
But it's
so
a model school now.
It's a model school now. But we were reimbursed in the 70th percentile.
Yes.
We had a huge reimbursement, and they have changed that. Right. But I don't think that's what's really killing districts' budgets. It's back to what I said before. When you have all these mandates that are in the millions of dollars and you don't fund them, and Alan hit the nail right on the head. You have these things going on. Social-emotional problems have become a bigger and bigger burden on the back of schools. So Tom had talked about individual education plans. Well, you're running at 20% to 30% more individual education plans than ever before. And each one of these students, when they have an IEP, requests more services. And when you have more services, you have higher costs. And when you have higher costs, it's just what you talked about, and Alan and Tom and Tony. Where does the money come from if the state's not ponying it up? And the taxpayers say, well, we'll pay our state tax and we pay our local tax.
Sure.
But they're burdening the local municipalities. And the local municipality can only go up 2.5% per year. And no one wants an override.
Alan's going to get the last question before we go to break. Go ahead.
Well, what happens, and I almost hate saying this, but you have one student in their IEP, say, just for round numbers, say it costs $75,000. A year.
Mm.
The kids who don't have an individual IEP, their $9,000 a year goes down to $8,000.
Oh.
Because we don't have any more money.
Mm. Right, right.
So we're trying to treat all children fairly. We're trying to give them the best education possible. But the state's not allowing us to do that.
Right.
If you don't have an issue, you end up paying for some of the kids who do have an issue, or you don't get as much because we have to spend. So it's a horrible situation.
Right.
You know, and it's our decisions.
The kids in Brockton who are taking on the nose are the general education kids because of all the different.
It's everywhere.
And we're gonna get into that, because when we come back, I wanna look to Tom and Tony, because we look at the individual, and we even Bob as well. While Middleborough kind of goes to its taxpayers and Brockton goes to its taxpayers, it's a different story for Whitman Hanson, South Shore Votech, and Southeastern Region. We're going to step aside for a moment. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. You are listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The Cape Cod Canal is one of the most underrated marvels in Massachusetts. Usually, we're looking down at the canal from the bridge, hoping the traffic would please get moving. Do you know that down there, under the bridge, people are jogging, riding bikes, fishing, even poaching lobsters? In both meanings of the word. September 4th, 1998, at the stroke of midnight, Jake Redman drove his Jeep Cherokee past the no motorized vehicles notice. He parked directly under the Sagamore Bridge and went down to the riprap to check on his illegal lobster trap. He returned to his Jeep at the precise moment a Stanley thermos bottle left on a bridge girder in 1989 by a painter finally jiggled loose and caved in his windshield. The thermos was not broken.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. We come to your work or home and we fix your windshield. And my boys do a good job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
My dad did a great job.
Hi, I'm Stacy Curtin, co-director of the Pembroke Firehouse Food Pantry. Please join us on Saturday, April 27th for our pantry's Spring Fling. This event, which is being held at the Pembroke Middle School, will feature over 60 vendors and craft tables. We also have a table full of great raffles and a 50-50. All proceeds will benefit Pembroke's Firehouse Food Pantry. Again, we will be at the Pembroke Middle School, which is located on 559 School Street, Route 27, on April 27th from 10 to 3. Thank you, and we'll see you there.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we are back for the second part of this segment. And I want to thank, I think we should have you guys come back in May if you're able to. I don't know about Tom, though, because usually Brockton is doing the fisticuffs breakout in City Hall with the city councilors. I should say the budget discussions happen towards the end of May.
Well, the reason why we are actually having this conversation tonight and why the state is basically dealing with this is because Brockton has brought it to the forefront once again.
Right.
Again, we basically
we'll talk about it in a couple of moments. Yeah, well, but yeah, you're going to talk about the education and the equity in education lawsuit that is rolling along with that has many suitors.
Not only that, but I mean where we are with our budget and how it ties in.
Right.
I mean,
and you're talking, of course, charter schools and other things.
We predicted this whole mess in Brockton because we knew that the charter school into Brockton was going to hit us and basically be responsible for about, you know, an $8 million deficit every year. And basically it came home to roost, and that's what's happening. You know, we have a charter school in the city that doesn't really provide any unique services that we do not provide, and it's basically hitting all of the kids that have remained behind really hard. Mm-hmm. And we predicted it. You know, people that came out to support it, you know, we told them this was going to happen, and they basically, you know, look at us like we're crazy. But you know, it's the truth.
Well, we in a couple of moments, I definitely want to talk about Ed Reform of '93, and you know, are we going to see a second
Well, we have to, because the issues that existed in '93 don't exist today.
Correct.
I mean, you know, the escalation, like Tony said, of health insurance. We have an ELL population and people coming in from all places, all over the world. In urban centers, you know, we have a 30-some-odd percent ELL population that requires...
And what is ELL?
English language learners, people that are coming from all sorts of places. Again.
If you need help, hang up and then dial your operator.
Yeah, you mentioned the Haitian earthquake. Well, you know, in about a month, we had about 250 students, which is a pretty large percent of one of our grammar schools.
Right.
You know, so with no aid from anyone, the state or the federal government. So, you know, it's really... It was really back then, you know, a disgrace as far as I was concerned.
Well, I want to turn to the folks who have multiple budgets. Now, I think we lost Tom. Hopefully, Tom is going to be calling back. But you look at Whitman-Hanson, it's two communities that each of those communities have to decide. There's some sort of a formula, depending on how many students there are, in which each part of the district has to pay. And then you look at Southeastern Regional, where... You know, your superintendent director or your director...
Superintendent, yep.
Yeah, will have to go to each one of these communities and have conversations to be able to pull that member funding to be able to pay for your schools. That's got to be an interesting dynamic, per se.
Well,
Well, when you talk about it, Kevin, in the towns of Whitman and Hanson, 60% of the students come from Whitman, 40% come from Hanson. Mm. So every year we set an assessment. Right. And people get confused. They think the assessment is a total increase in your budget.
Right.
Like Whitman Hanson set it at 15.1% this year. And it's one of those numbers that it gets set because the school committee can't ever go up on the number.
We cannot.
You can only come backwards on the number. So they set it usually where the superintendent comes in, particularly this year, and said, this is what it takes to have a level service budget.
Right.
So he came in and said, this is what it's going to take to have a level service budget. The town came back. One of the towns came back at 6.5. Well, 6.5, every 1 point of assessment is a roughly $200,000 figure. So when you go from 15.1 to 6.5, it's pretty easy to do the numbers. I mean, Whitman Hanson handed out pink slips somewhere between 58 and 62 or 3 or 4 the other day because we have to notify teachers that we might have a reduce in force or we're going to have a reduce in force and give them the opportunity to apply for other jobs because they could be losing their jobs. Some are definitely going to be, but with the number being what it is, we haven't got it totally set yet, but we have to notify them that this is going to happen. So it's very difficult.
And I think we got Tom back. Tom, you back on the line?
Yes, I am, Kevin.
All right. Tom, I don't know if you had a chance to hear. So Bob was just kind of describing what it's like for a district with two partners. You have 8 partners that you have to go to, that they send students, and that you have to, well, you got to bounce around as a superintendent director and go to every town meeting, right?
As many as I can. We've got 5 communities that have a town meeting on the same night, so I have a few cardboard cutouts, and I go live to one of them anyway.
Okay. And Tony, what's it like for your superintendent?
So it's our superintendent and Mark Morris, our chief financial officer. They do the same exact thing. They go to each and every meeting with the assessment, seeking approval.
It's an interesting dynamic to have to try to get funding
right
by going that way, and instead, like I said, we were talking about Brockton being a standalone. It's a matter of, it's a combination of grants and what you get from the state.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to be able to fund a budget the way that the folks can fund a budget. I mean, we basically, you know, the towns step up and basically provide the folks with what they need.
Right.
You know, whereas in Brockton, for the last 5 years, you know, reduction in force notices, RIF notices, have been, you know, a part of our budget process every single year. I mean, we're down probably 350 teachers from 5 years ago,
right,
not to mention about 450 in support staff. So how I describe the Brockton budget is basically a regressive budget. I would love to have a level funded budget this year from last year, but we always have a regressive budget. We always have to every year cut, which is really disgraceful. The state, in terms of all, it's not just Brockton, but most of the urbans, you know, the formula and the way the state funds the urbans, because the state provides the largest share to the urbans as opposed to towns, where the towns provide they're the opposite. You know, some towns will provide 80%, the state provides 20, some towns 60, the state 40. Brockton, it's the total opposite. 20% is Brockton, 80% is the state. Based on our demographics and, you know, the issues that don't exist in some of the other towns. Not to say they don't have issues. Like Tony said, health insurance is an issue for all of us. Mm. You know, our health insurance bills are going up about 9% a year, and we're only, you know, the state is only giving us an increase from year to year of, in Brockton, less than 1%. I mean, that's ridiculous. Wow. So we're getting croaked on health insurance, but that's just one of our issues. You know, our ELL, our low-income students, the way they calculated the funding for low-income students, we lost 4,000 students to the tune of about $10 million. That combined with charter schools and the increases in costs tell us exactly why we're in the position we are in Brockton today. And so far, the State House has been, you know, silent on that because there are less urban districts in the state than there are, you know, suburban, so to speak. So
the clout.
It's basically clout by numbers. I don't fault, you know, the reps for trying to take care of the communities. That's their job.
Right.
But you know, there does have to be, when you look at all the urban communities in the state and see, why is Massachusetts so doing so well in education, but yet the urbans keep going down, 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 and that's where, you know, our minority communities are mainly, you know, and then people point out, you know, that, hey, what are we doing to help these kids? And the state says, we're spending more on education every year. Yeah, but you're taking away from the urbans every year, and we're basically falling behind. It's really a horrible budget cycle that's been going on, and hopefully people are going to do something about it. You know, and we alluded to an equity in education lawsuit, and right now that is in the wings. We're seeing what the budget is.
But what will happen? Well, let me ask what will happen with this? What is the hope that will happen? Will it strictly just be for the urban communities,
or is it
going to be sweeping across the board?
It's sweeping across the board in terms of special ed costs,
okay,
health insurance costs, unfunded mandate costs, English language learner costs, technology costs.
Okay.
You know, everyone, you know, is a victim to technology. The state is putting in the unfunded mandates about the testing has to be done by computer.
Yep.
Well, many of the smaller towns and many of, you know, the urban centers don't have the number of computers necessary
or
the techs in the systems to be able to handle all these computers. 17,000 kids in Brockton. If we had 17,000 tablet computers for every kid, you know how many techs I need to hire? You know, it's a lot more than what I've got right now in the Brockton Public Schools to handle,
so
you know, the maintenance of those and the upkeep and the, you know, and making
technology.
Sure they're running. I mean,
it's tough to provide proper technology.
But, and that's across the board.
Okay.
That's everybody.
So there's a lot of issues that affect everybody.
Right.
I think when it comes down to that, though, Kevin.
Okay. Well, because I want to get Tom in on this, because Tom was, we brought him back and he had like one sentence, and then we haven't went back to, because I want to know what he thinks in regards, how does an equity in education lawsuit help of OTEC? How does it help your school, Tom?
Kevin, I think across the board what the group has been saying is that the foundation budget allotments, if you look at the Department of Ed webpage, their Chapter 70 page, or you just look at the governor's budget, just as a starter, those values for each type of student and classification, all those numbers need to go up. So right now the foundation, for instance, the foundation budget calls for 3.75% assumed special ed population for K-12 districts and 4.75% for vocational districts. I do not have the severity of special education needs that other school districts have, but I have about 30% of my students on IEPs. The bottom line is there's got to be more money in all of these areas. That's the whole premise of having equity. What is it that various diverse districts need in order to get the job done? And in whatever way we can do this, this conversation, it raises everyone's awareness that what we have in common is we're all advocates for children. We want them to be successful. Society expects that we are going to make them successful. We cannot do it without adequate funding. We hope the legislature will address that promptly.
And a center like Brockton Charter Schools play into that, because they don't take the IEP kids, the high special needs kids that Brockton has to deal with, and gladly deals with them, but we just want to deal with them on a fair level playing field financially. So the charter schools are getting a blended rate, a higher rate than our general ed kids, but yet they're not taking on these obligations. So naturally, that comes back to hurt a district like Brockton and many districts.
How would an equity in education lawsuit help Middleborough? And communities like Middleborough.
I think exactly what Mr. Hicks said. The all those increases help all of our students straight across the board. I mean, everybody says education is important, but like we said earlier, nobody has the political backbone to back that up and say, all right, well, we have to increase the foundation budget. So that just straight across the board, we need more money. The health costs. They affect everybody.
But it's the problem that it's like it's a one size fits all, and it's not. It's the way the funding works is it's not.
But that has
it's
to
not
be the
unique.
Start. That has to be the start, the first step.
Yeah. Right.
Because we've been 26 years without taking any steps.
That's the right.
So let's take this first step, and then we can start tweaking it a little bit and working on things. Because I can't believe anybody would run for the school committee in the city of Brockton after what I just heard.
12 years, right there.
You know, God
and
bless
actually,
you.
You're up for re-election, right?
This November, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And like you, I got involved because of my children. Right. I wanted to make sure that they had what they needed. And for many years, we did. We were able to. And with all the doom and gloom that there is, the Brockton Public Schools is still a wonderful place because we do have so many great programs for kids. And the school committee has done a good job in terms of keeping programs as opposed to just getting rid of things solely on the basis of class size. I mean, we could get rid of every single extracurricular and every single sport and say, if you're going to play a sport or get involved in this, you're going to have to come up with the money like the other towns. But we know in Brockton we can't do that. We wouldn't do that. And a lot of kids in our school system use those fine arts programs, the choir programs, the musical programs, the sports programs, as a tool, as a lift to get them into good schools, get scholarships, keep them interested in education in schools. There are too many, you know, Tony can talk to you about it. There's too many distractions in Brockton. We need these kids involved in positive, well-supervised, good programs. So the school committee, you know, people will criticize and say, well, your class sizes are a little high. Yes, we agree they are, but we're trying to keep a blend to give a kid a well-rounded education and keeping these special programs. Tony can tell you about Cedric Turner and the business economic incentive and economic education program that he has. It's like an entrepreneurial program. Right. And these kids are doing great work, but it costs money to keep a program like that with all of our other ailments. So it's a juggle, but there are still great things in the city of Brockton.
Tom, anything you want to say? I know you've been hanging on the line, and I really appreciate it. Anything you want to say in closing in regards to equity in education? Or
Wait, we need another 3 hours, Kev. What is going on here?
Well, just, Tom, just for you.
Yeah, right.
Just for you, Tom. Because you explained it so eloquently.
And the bishop.
The biggest group in the room.
The bishop and I know what the issues are in Brockton. But not to say that the towns don't have their issues.
Every district, Kevin, has issues.
Absolutely.
There needs to be equity in education because public schools.
But that was the idea here, is to make sure that we had kind of a round conversation here.
Right.
Public schools should be for everyone.
Right.
Okay? And when you start watering down the educational value by opening charter schools, by doing lots of other things, you start losing students. If you can't offer all day kindergarten, you lose that kindergarten student and you might lose them for the whole 12 years of education. All of this needs to be taken up, but it's very difficult when you have people at the State House making rules and laws with the flick of a pen, but not thinking out how to implement it.
That's the question. The disconnect is, the reality is that they're not in the trenches.
They don't know what we need.
And they're actually not listening to school committee members as well. So I think that
school committee is the redheaded stepchild of politics.
Tom, isn't it the truth?
I had red hair, Tom, when I had
nobody disagrees with you. Nobody that knows anything disagrees.
They're not listening to the school committee members.
No. They don't come down firsthand, like Tony said, Bishop Branch said to Brockton. We've invited them down, the governor, several times, and when the phone answers, we know who's calling.
Tom, and I tried to go to you, but the conversation broke out here. Was there anything you wanted to weigh in before we let you go?
Kevin, I appreciate the opportunity, but no, I just say, get this episode, get it onto your podcast, post it on social media, and keep the conversation going.
And I want to get you in studio next time, and you'll have more of a chance, because, again, there's so many folks here have stuff to weigh in on, and it's, I definitely would like to see if we could revisit this either in May or maybe June.
This needs to be a monthly conversation, Kevin, once every 2 or 3 years. Maybe it could be Kevin Tocci Monday Night Education Talk.
Hello.
There you go. Hey, don't you do something on the weekend with some other guy?
I can make time for you, Kevin. Come on.
Kevin Tocci, Tom, Education Czar of radio.
There you go.
Tom, I want to thank you for joining us. And again, being patient enough to weigh in from time to time for Social Votech.
Not at all, Kevin. Bob, thanks. You got great people on tonight. They're carrying a good message forward. Thank you.
You got
thanks,
it.
Tom.
Thank you.
And we got a couple of minutes left here. And again,
I'll
that was Tom
Hickey.
Go ahead, Alan.
So, the town of Middleborough, we're going through a little bit of a municipal building boom. We built a wastewater treatment facility.
Police station.
We just built a $12 million police station, $10 million.
and then high school.
Don't let that hit the papers.
And I know. But people would ask me, they're like, geez, we just built a police station. How can we build a police station and then fund a high school? And I said to him, I said, well, if you don't build a new high school,
right,
we're going to have to build a bigger police station.
Ooh.
And that's really the bottom line.
Right.
It's fiscally more responsible to invest in education than it is our penal system.
I agree.
And if you don't
100%.
If you don't invest in your education system, you will have to invest in your penal system.
That's the argument that we're making on the front lines, that, you know, it's the prison pipeline. A part of that is because of the lack of educational funding and just the lack, or again, I keep saying this, I know I'm sounding like a broken, the lack of willpower to make changes. We prefer not to have our students and pupils in the Department of Corrections.
But the only thing, had the governor on last week, and the one thing when we were talking education,
he gave us $8 more million. That's about it.
I know what he did.
Stop.
Yeah. Easy here, okay?
Oh, okay.
500. This is what the elected official said is that over the past 4 years, going on 5 years, that administration has given $500 million towards education. Where is the $500 million going? Is it being spent properly? Is it being used? Or, as we have alluded to here,
It's being absorbed by cost.
And I know, I get that. But what I'm saying to you is,
and it's not keeping up.
And
with
we mentioned it just like by and a we like mentioned it a few minutes ago.
This is my vice chair.
You've got hold up, but you've got elected officials. You guys are elected officials.
Yes.
Okay. Don't you have any pull with these? We have them in here for political forums.
No, we don't.
We just said that, Kevin. No one's listening. It's the school committee members.
No,
Kevin,
stepchildren.
Don't listen to the board of selectmen either.
He stopped me in my tracks. So I'm just going to turn to Alan. Alan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He doesn't listen to the board of selectmen either.
Okay,
but when you know what's funny is the governor used to be a selectman.
Yeah, in Swampscott.
I wish he would remember that sometimes.
But he isn't the only one who is passing bill. He's not alone. Don't forget, you have a Senate. He has more political clout than he cares to deal with.
That's exactly right.
Stop talking over each other. Okay.
But the Secretary of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education put in and changed the rules, like with regard to Brockton.
Right.
They went to direct certification for kids that were that are low income kids. Right. Okay. What does that mean? If we have a population, which we all know in Brockton, are kids that are undocumented. So a lot of these families are afraid to sign up for, you know, food stamps, welfare, housing, all this. We lost in 1 year 4,000 kids, which was about $8 million. Are you kidding me? How do we absorb that? And they knew that was going to happen. And what did they do with that money? They funded that money to a lot of, they were proud of themselves and said, just like you said, Kevin, we've put $500 million in education. Yeah, you gave some of that money to Middleborough, who needs it. Abington, did Wellesley need it? Did Marblehead need it? Did Duxbury need it?
Falmouth?
Did these wealthy communities, Weston need it? Wayland? Lexington? I could go on and on. They all got it. The lousy money that they got, they took from us. That's who they picked our urban kids' pockets.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that just urban kids need this stuff. There are small towns that absolutely have issues. You know,
you're looking at
right, exactly.
$5 million.
But what I'm saying is, they stacked the deck against smaller communities as well as urbans and took from the poor to give to the not so rich or to the rich, and then they're proud of themselves. What they've basically done is they've hurt the poorer kids.
Sure.
Absolutely. So I am a little impassioned because I've been doing this and unfortunately been suffering through my students for the last 5 years of laying off. So
I've done those stories, Tom.
Exactly. And you've been with me the whole time. And Tony's been with me the whole time. Yeah, he knows the story in Brockton. So, I mean, we could do a whole show on that. We need to do more shows, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, BMS is around the corner. So
I want to know, where's Robin Hood for the urban communities?
I don't know, Tony.
Yeah, come on. I mean,
seriously. But as I was trying to say before I was cut off, And I don't know how that happened, but I was cut off.
We didn't mean to cut you off, but we're passionate about
Robin,
it.
We don't know where Robin Hood is.
There's a lot of passion in the room here tonight, Robin Kevin. You're getting the secondary Robin Hood tonight.
Is sitting on the desk of our attorney waiting to see what the legislature is going to do. And if they don't do the right thing, Robin Hood will be going up to the SJC of Massachusetts and filing a case with the Superior Court. And
Where does this stand? I mean, this is 2 years in the making in regards to the equity in education. Where does this stand at this particular time? Have you heard from the administration as to what to do?
Well, let's put it this way. You know, there was a meeting, you know, there's a meeting at the highest levels, and they know what's going on. They don't want this to happen, and we're going to basically see what they do. Mm. Now, Brockton, you know, people say, well, you know, you've been talking about it for a couple of years. Yeah, but Brockton, if we just went alone and went it alone, and
it can't work. It won't work.
We had to bring in other communities. You've got to show that the funding formula, not just for Brockton, but the funding formula is all over the Commonwealth, correct?
Who else is on board with this, Tom?
I mean, Lynn, Lawrence, I think Middleborough is Taunton. You know, we've got a whole bunch of communities.
What about Whitman Hanson?
The formula, Kevin, can't be a one size fits all. But because of the demographics with Brockton or Middleborough or Rowell, you get out into Greenfield.
Right.
It's why it needs to be changed. It needs to be tweaked for each and every separate problem.
This happened not too long ago.
When 1993?
No, that's a long time ago. They have a commission that looks at the funding formula.
Yeah, 5 years ago, and what did they do?
Nothing. That's what I've been talking about.
Nothing.
That's part of our case.
The funding commission made our case.
Yes.
Exactly.
2 years.
The state basically produced a report against themselves.
Yes.
Basically, you know.
That's what they did.
Yeah, okay. So that's part of our case.
All right, so in closing, Tom.
In closing.
You have 30 seconds, Tom.
I thank you for having us, Kevin. This is a great forum. The funding formula is broken. It needs to be readdressed. Hopefully, the legislature will do the right thing. But if not, we will go forward with this suit. And we look forward to working with all of our other communities because there are issues that we all share together, you know, for the benefit of all of our kids.
Tom Minicello, vice chair for the Brockton School Committee. Bob, my co-host.
Kevin. I share the same exact sentiments that we just talked about. It needs to be, it can't be a one size fits all. It doesn't work.
Tony?
The longer we wait, we're doing a disservice to the students and public schools in the city of Brockton and across this state.
Last but not least, Alan.
I echo everything that's been said so far, and I agree wholeheartedly with it, and I look forward to seeing what happens at the legislature.
Maybe we should try to do this again next month.
Sign me up.
Kevin, we're challenging you to that.
Yes.
Sign us all up.
Yes, but we'll have to do it in smaller increments. Try to have a nice.
We can call it.
Have you here.
Wait, we can call it Kerr.
You will be we the co-host
call it,
next.
We
time.
Can call it Kerr. Kevin Education Reform. Kerr. We got an acronym for it.
There you go already. We can make sure you say what the acronym is
In education, there's too many acronyms.
Too many. But guys, I want to thank you very much for coming.
And
I want to thank
Kevin.
The folks for tuning in.
Thank you.
That's all the program that we have until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have a good night.